lot of new stuff happening because the internet has popped off so hard. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the internet has popped off. Independently.
Like, there's amazing artists, you know, touring the world, selling out, you know, shows, doing their thing, and you barely hear about them because they have their niche followings and they're able to do what they do. The music industry, like Jay said, it's like the Wild Wild West right now. It's like there's no rules, and that's what's actually cool about it, too. So as much, you know, it's give and take. As much as there's bad things, there's a lot of cool things happening.
But you're not going by that now. Like, a lot of your work now is inspired by the psychedelic rock.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, basically what's happened is, you know, for the last few years, we've been trying to be like, man, how do we get our stuff on radio? That's everybody's big question, right? Like, radio is, how do you get a song on radio? You feel like you got a great song. And then, you know, everybody's trying to fit the format or make the catchy chorus or do whatever it is to get a quote-unquote radio-ready song. And, you know, the reality is we've been able to, you know, sell out shows, hit, you know, chart on the top of iTunes and Billboard and all that stuff without having any radio play. And so what we started to realize is, like, why are we fighting for some of that, you know, to fit the mold, to fit the format, when we really have the freedom to do whatever we want because our fans and our followers love the music that we make and what we stand for. So on this record, when I mentioned psychedelic rock, what I meant was, like, when you listen to Stairway to Heaven, that's like an 8-minute song, right? It's,
yep.
There's no format to it. It's not a 16-bar verse and an 8-bar chorus. It's just a beautiful song that evolves and has sections.
Yes.
And, you know,
it's kind of like how house music is now.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But what happened is, for the radio to fit the radio, they chopped it down to a 2.5-minute song to fit the format of radio so that they could have more commercials. You know what I'm saying?
How did you create your fan base? Because, like I said, I see the followers. I see everything. How did it start off for you and get to this point?
Yeah. Man, really, there's so many parts to the story. And there's a movie coming out about it soon. It's called Unashamed. And really, it just documents the whole movement, man. Like, Lecrae and some of the homeboys, they, you know, started out in Texas. They had just gotten out of college in Texas. They started this whole movement called 116, Unashamed. You know, they started a record label out of it called Reach Records. And the internet was just so, like, you know, popping off at that time that we started garnering a following and a fan base of people that were rocking with our message and what we stood for and the music we made. And it just continued to grow with the explosion of the internet. And, you know, I think that the internet, because the internet, you know, is really it. People are able to find music, like, there's no more gatekeepers. You know what I'm saying?
Like, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying that the main gatekeepers for a long time were, like, radio and magazines, you know, and TV. And the internet has found ways for artists to be able to go around all those things and to be able to garner their own followings and fan bases.
Yes.
You know, and so that's really why there's so many successful artists that you've never heard of through the main channels that you would go to, typically. And so that was a big part of our success.
But you're really good with your social media rollouts. You have web series. Talk a little bit about that, because I think that's pretty innovative with your brand, and that's different. That's something that you don't see a lot. You know, people don't really care about the branding aspect.
Yeah, the brand. Let's talk about the brand. Yeah, this is hip-hop.
I'm invested with my social and being able to connect with people. One, because I enjoy it. I enjoy being able to connect with people, for real. Like, these people who are following, shout out everybody on Periscope right now. What's good?
Everybody, you know, listening right now.
Everybody listening.
He got his Periscope. I'm filming the whole show.
Does
it say how many followers on Periscope that you have?
Probably.
It does. And it'll stop it sometimes, too, if it's too full.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
Well, shout out to everybody. You know, these are the people that come out and show love and support me. Mm-hmm. Come out to concerts and buy merch, get CDs, and, like, you know what I'm saying? They really support me. They allow me to be able to do this full time. You know what I'm saying? I keep my bills paid and I'm able to go. So it's dope that I'm able to now reach out to them and connect with them and say thank you personally. You know, I did a thing recently called Andy I Found It. If you look on the hashtag, you see everybody taking pictures with their physical CDs that they got. And I picked a few of them. I got their phone numbers and I called them personally and said thank you for going out to the stores and picking up some copies and showing love. I love the fact that I have the time and the space to be able to make those touches in those ways. And I never want to lose that because, you know, these are the people that are allowing
making
me to
who
be
you are.
This.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you want to show love and you want to remind them I'm just like you. You know what I mean? Because I was a kid who was probably on the other side of that, you know, a few years ago, just wishing Jay or somebody would reach out to me. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And you're supporting them. So, no disrespect to them either, but it's just like, I have the space to do that right now, and I want to. And plus, I have fun with it. You know what I mean? It is fun. I get to create videos on Instagram and do all that stuff. You know, I think about it from a fan perspective, like, if I was a fan, what would I want? You know, and what would be cool to me? And I'm like, isn't that dope? Let's create cool, meaningful moments.
Well, listen, I want to play a record off your album called Hear My Heart, and this is dedicated to your sister,
right,
who's deaf.
Right.
Was she born deaf?
She was born deaf.
And we read something that at the beginning you didn't know how to speak sign language, correct?
Yeah. I actually, to this day, I'm not fluent in sign language. But that's what the whole record is about.
Yes, exactly. So you learned a little bit to speak to your sister?
Yeah. That's part of the rollout on this song, is that there's a visual coming soon, you know what I mean, to match the record. And, you know, that's part of the rollout of it. But the record was me apologizing.
It's cool, because, you know, we don't have a brand manager of our own. I get to use words like rollout and be my own brand manager. Isn't that dope? That's just dope.
I'm going to play this record. How did you communicate?
I get to be a marketing guy while also rapping. Isn't that dope?
Does somebody else in the family speak sign language?
Yeah, my mom does. But my sister, she was always able to read my lips.
Oh, okay.
And I could hear her when she would speak. Mm-hmm. You know, some people that are deaf, when they speak, you can't make out what they're saying. But with my sister, I was able to. Okay. And so we would communicate, you know, through, you know, I move my lips and she would hear me or, you know, understand by reading my lips, and then communicate through pounding on stuff or getting her attention, you know. But she was much older than me, too. So that's some of the reason why we didn't connect a lot. But, you know, an experience that I talk about on the second verse is really what brought that to light for me. It was like, you know, we were at a picnic and she introduced me to her friends and I didn't know how to respond to them in sign language. And that was that moment that light bulb went off for me. It was like, they're all having conversation. I don't know what they're saying. Man, this must be how my sister feels her whole life. You know, we're all having conversations. She doesn't know what we're not considering her. You know, I just confronted with my own selfishness at that point. And, you know, I think God's growing me, changing me, stretching me, and making me a better man. I think that was part of the process.
Well, I want to play the record so everybody can hear what you're talking about. It's off the album, Uncomfortable, Hear My Heart. Andy Mineo's in the building.
Yeah.
Call him up, 877-60-HIP-HOP. It's DJ Sus One, the feature presentation, co-host Ali V. Let's do it.
Yeah, all right.
Another future classic produced by Static Selective is yours. Listen up, fucker.
Loving hip hop on you, please. Turn that off. Put some crazy shit on, man. Put the Nature Channel on. I want to see a fucking deer get eaten. Let me see an alligator bite something, man. Can't handle all this lovey-dovey shit, man.
From the door, answer the door in a breath alone. I only get head on tour because they can't have what's yours.
That's right.
Shorty Greek with an African physique. She tasted like a peach and her eyes were green. I'm headed to the beach, take a ride with me. And oh, baby, sit the weed, bitch, get high with me.
Bitch, get high.
Jagged ass blade, her legs spread. She said she needed me inside of her, she held me tighter. Told her pass the weed. Put your panties to your feet, just don't ruin my seats. I'm a new freak, now it's been years of creeping. And I've been thinking about forever lately. Your body feel like heaven, baby. Come and save me, cause at the end of the day, it's me.
Man,
lyrics.
So you see, that's it. I got to leave this place. I don't care what these people think. I'm just sitting here making myself nauseous with this ugly food that stinks. So you bust out the door while it's still close, still sick from the food you eat. And then you run to the store for quick relief from a bottle of KO Pectate. And then you call your friend 2 weeks later to see how he has been. And he says, I don't understand about the food, but we're still friends. But with a hip hop, you hear me to the hip of the hip hop. You don't stop the rocker to the bang bang. Look, you say, I'm jumping the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie beat. I said, Hank, can you rock? Can you rock to the rhythm that just don't stop? But can you hit me too? The shoot me too. I said, come on, make the people move.
I go to the halls and then ring the bell, because I am the man with the clientele. And if you ask me why, I rock so well, the big bang. I got clientele from the time I was only 6 years old. I never forgot what I was told. It was the best advice that I ever had.
Snick Snicks, the feature presentation radio show.
Periscope, I should sign up for that. That's what that guy just said. And then he did.
If you're on the East Coast, I got Rick Ross at House Nightclub tonight.
Nice.
So, yeah. Like, oh, then you pass to a guy, like, along the boards or something?
Yeah, there's a, I mean, all that's been there for a while.
Hitting feels a lot better this year. Like the hits, I feel like yeah. I'm laying in on people, like, actually connect and do some, like, real, like, knock them back good kind sure. of stuff.
You know, the way the game is now professionally is very recognizable. Like, there's like, a dozen visual cues that I think, like, you can always draw from a real hockey game.
Yeah.
And they're nailing, like, a lot of that stuff.
We had talked before about the momentum when you pass to a guy of them right. being set up for a pass.
So, I still have problems with passing.
It's
so
hard.
It's very hard. Alex was talking about the thing they're calling the on-ice trainer. It's basically turns the game into kind of like an infographic in
a little bit, yeah.
Where you are getting constantly fed tutorial, you know, control schemes.
But that's for me.
But that's fine, and it's good for people who are good at the game too, because it'll expand your horizon.
I've been playing those games for years, yeah. and I still, up to this point, often felt like I was getting lucky when I was scoring goals. Whereas now, it's like with that feedback, I at least kind of know what I did wrong. And, you know, even if you don't follow their suggestions to the letter, like, it gives me ideas about what I should be looking at, what I should be thinking about doing. Why should I pass to this person that they're indicating I should pass to? Like, what's right. the timing like on that? Like, it's actually really helpful.
It's helpful, and what kind of sucks is when that goes away, like, if you play online.
Right.
You come to find real quick, like, oh my God, passing's hard.
Yeah.
And so the button to pass is also the button that changes your player on defense.
Right.
So you will, and I do this all the time, if I'm playing defense and I'm trying to, you know, change players right when the opposing team passes, I'll sometimes preemptively pass the puck once I get it.
Like you're queuing it up?
Yeah.
It's and the you, same you intercepted the pass?
Yeah. So I intercept them and immediately give it to no, give it turn right over.
So huh, that's super frustrating.
Yeah, they have to change that. Like, whatever that...
There's no, like, option for changing those controls around the...
No, you can't change the controls, but you can change, like, the control really? Scheme.
Oh. Yeah,
which is, like, you know, 90s, okay. or you do, sure. you know, like, a real...
But person. it's always been pass is the same button.
Yeah, it's been, but I find it more problematic this year than ever before. So I want them to fix that. I think there's... I got into the weeds with, like, difficulty level versus play style. So there's, like, pro, which is, like... chumps, and then
hey, pros my play on man.
Well, I'm just you know,
is there like all pro,
and then there's all star, which is like with the online difficulty, the ranked online difficulty is all star slash hardcore. Hardcore being the play style.
Okay,
hardcore. Yeah,
yeah. So I just think that play style, the one they do online, is not very fun.
Friendly.
It's slower. It's a little lethargic, and you have to like. Really take your time with finessing and stuff like that, and you get handcuffed a bunch. I just think
like a little too sim.
Yeah, I think a lot of tweaking needs to happen. Like the NHL is the speed of the real game is very fast, and they don't capture that
yeah.
in that mode.
Mm.
Yeah.
They don't. They really have not made an arcade style hockey game.
No, so they had NHL 94. Like anniversary mode last year,
which was right. not. No, that was 2 years.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago,
and it wasn't great.
It wasn't great. All they did was like make it blue ice.
Yeah, and sort of like sped it up.
Yeah,
but there's a different control scheme or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like
they sped it up. Hits are over the top. You can get a ridiculous game by playing like pro, and then there's some
take all the rules.
Yeah,
down.
There's yeah. some like. Dump all the sliders down to zero.
But the reality is that arcade hockey has not been good since, or existed really since NHL hits yeah. 2002.
EA made 3-on-3 hockey game for last generation, and that was pretty good, I thought.
I don't remember that one.
It's pretty good. It had like power ups on the ice. Yeah. It was fun.
I remember that.
But that game's, you know, probably 9 years old.
Yeah. So, in this year's, do they have the EA? They do trading cards and
yeah, Ultimate Team's in there. It's still a deep ass mode. And I have to say, I was kind of missing the draft champion stuff for Madden and that because like that is a really good way to kind of feed your Ultimate Team without having to necessarily spend a million hours building a team in that mode.
Right. There's a mode called Be a Pro, which they kind of revamped a little bit.
Is their player, like, Be a Player mode.
And I think that's fantastic. They did such a good job with, like, incorporating the on-ice trainer. So, like, you get little achievements for each shift you take.
Yeah.
So you don't play the whole game. You play in shifts, yeah, like you would in real life.
And you sim pass the stuff you're not playing.
Right. And you can, like, if you make a great pass, like, you'll get points for that great assist. Or if you take a really good shot, like a well-aimed shot, you get points, and you sort of...
You essentially build stats, yeah, based on your own actual play style, as opposed to, like, what the game kind of rigidly would normally define as your play
style. I thought this was in last year.
I mean, this mode has always been there, but this is, like, the big change, is, like, the way that the feedback is presented to you is much more specialized.
Which is just exactly how it would work in the league, where, like, they'll sit you down, and you get tape, and they're like, look, you see this play you did there? That was smart. Smart hockey there.
Thanks, coach.
That's why you're going to be dressed for the next game.
And Alex, you made a face, though, when you...
Well, so there's two things. I like that, and the other thing I like about it is because of that stuff, and sort of, like, rookie stuff that they built into it, where you're kind of playing, like, before you get drafted, trying to sort of show off your skills to other teams.
Right.
Like, that stuff's really good. Like, I started out kind of bad. Then, like, as I kind of got my groove, I started, like, becoming the top scorer on my team. But then as soon as I got drafted and moved, like, to the NHL, it's like, oh, hey, by the way, the shit that was working in the minors ain't going to work up here.
Hey, man, that's life.
And I think that stuff is presented really, really well. The thing that mode has always lacked, and it still lacks, is the personality. Like, EA has never done Be a Player stuff well in terms of, like, making it feel like it's an actual human being story, as opposed to just, well, no, you can just play this position and it's fun, right?
Do they do they did it in the basketball stuff, remember when
like, so that's 2K.
Oh, that was.
Yeah, and they still do that. Yeah, they still do that.
And it had the horrible,
Spike,
like...
Lee directed that mode for this year's game.
Oh, wow.
So that is a Spike Lee joint this year.
That'll be interesting.
I think it says Spike Lee joint on
it does.
The cover.
It does, in fact, say it is a Spike Lee joint on the NBA 2K cover.
But I'm excited and nervous.
I'm interested.
Yes.
But so, you know, obviously hockey is a different vibe and a different thing, but I also wish that they would find a way to at least, like, put some of that personality into that mode, because it's very dry, and it's always been very dry.
It's a tough one. And it can go poorly.
It can go horribly sideways. I understand why they haven't really done it. I just would love to see them, because they've been doing the same version of that mode for a long time, and it's like, mechanically, I think they've gotten about as good as it's ever going to get.
The only real mode where you're even dealing on any level with, like, people is the Be a GM mode.
The franchise mode, which is terrible.
Yeah, which is just not fun. I
love franchise modes in sports games, but this one's is not good. And they've tried to add some, like, player chemistry stuff, but it all feels super random. Like, none of it really feels like it ties to anything that you're doing in that mode. And I don't care for it.
Okay. Well, we'll have a quick look of that probably next week.
Yes.
And
when you return.
Are you Bacalar? Are you doing any kind of review?
My review went up on Tuesday.
What'd you give it?
We don't do scores.
What'd you say?
What did Google decide your score was?
Google liked my review. I recommend it for sure. It's the best game they've made in 3 years.
For NHL.
I would say it's comparable to 14 in terms of quality.
Yeah, I didn't love 14 because I thought it was, like, the end of this era that needed a definite refresh. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like, all right, enough with this game already.
Yeah.
Last year, we know what happened, and this year is like, okay, you've got it back together. There's a lot of improvements that can be made.
Is this a baseline for the future?
I think this is a great starting point.
No, the baseline was last year. That was literally about as far down
below.
That was below Mother Base.
Last year was basically a demo that they sold.
It sounded like it. So that sounds good, because it sounds like EA Sports Team has their feet on the ground now.
Well, they have multiple teams all over them, and then the hockey team is totally separate from, like, Tiburon.
But even still, it doesn't seem like Madden found its footing this year.
Well, no, so Madden found its footing last year. The very first one they did was right at launch, and that was their, like, hey, by the way, this is the old engine, we've just up-res it. Like, that was 25, the 25th anniversary one.
Right.
But then the year after that is when they very clearly found their footing. They didn't even do a current-gen version of NHL 2 years ago.
Mm.
They only did 360 and PS3.
Okay, so I think I might have just skipped a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
It skipped a debut year.
But it's weird, because it felt like, even compared to, like, NBA Live, which is not a fucking good game, it still feels like the NHL team was, like, somehow the most blindsided by this generation of consoles. Like, they just weren't ready for it. And it's bizarre. Like, I don't know why that would have happened.
It was a very bizarre set of circumstances.
I mean, I've heard stories about why that happened, but I don't know if they're true or not, so I'm not going to repeat them.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah. I think we can close the door on that. I can see
we'll move on for a little
while. Neverman hockey.
Yeah, Neverman
hockey.
The best.
Oh, yeah.
I'm willing.
Come on.
You know else is great? Yeah. Cars. I fucking love cars.
I'm going to say
it's car season.
Let's say on What Is He Telling Us? You want to talk about cars again? Because, man, we talk about Pixels cars all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, no, these aren't talking cars. These are just cars that go around.
So we're
tracks.
Not talking about Forza.
No, we are.
Yeah. Oh, did you say they took the talking cars?
No. There's people talking over the cars, usually British people, but it's not actual talking
cars.
Is
one of them Rick Ocasek from the cars?
Not that I'm aware of.
No?
Also, he's not British.
So tell me about...
No, they're from, like, Boston.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know why in my mind I was assuming they're British.
I don't know why that is.
That's, like, offensive.
I'm very British.
Sorry.
I thought Rick Ocasek was British.
Sorry, Boston.
Yeah.
Sorry, Boston. And sorry.
They would love to be assumed to be British.
Yeah.
What's up with things?
Forza, man. Have you played Forza at all, Jeff?
Short amount of time. Just show my dad, because my dad loves cars.
Yeah,
I just love being like, hey, Dad, check that out. I'll be like, oh, they do.
I don't know exactly when I turn this corner. I've always enjoyed Forza. I've been reviewing them for years, but I've hit that point now where I am like the weird obsessive with those games. I play all of them. I signed up for the goddamn VIP, like get all the DLC shit, because I'm an idiot. Don't be like me. I am an idiot.
I love driving.
I know.
I fucking love driving cars and games. I don't know why.
It's because we love Brian Eckberg.
I mean, I do, but he's not, like, I don't really base my financial decisions around his existence. I'm sorry. I love you, Brian. You're a good dude, but, like,
I do.
I dump my money. When I'm dumping my money into your game, I'm not really thinking about you. I'm thinking about the fucking GMC van that's going to have some sweet fucking airbrush decals on it.
I'm going to drive around.
So that's what it is for you. It, you just have this, you know, strange obsession.
I love to collect cars in those dumb games.
So you've been playing Forza 6?
Yeah. Yeah, because I bought that package, I had access to it as of this past weekend.
And what do you think?
I think it's real good.
How aggressive are the drivers?
They're pretty fucking aggressive. So, Drivatars. Drivatars. I don't think they've really fixed that necessarily. Or if they have, I haven't noticed it yet. I'm still running into a lot of instances of people, AI drivers, who are horrible. Just absolutely miserable fucks.
This is supposedly the Drivatar takes your online profile of driving and sends it out to your friends so that when you're driving against your virtual friends, they supposedly drive like the people do.
Well, supposedly. Yeah. But the thing is, eventually, I think those things do get to a point where they are much more representative of what those players do online. It just takes an obscenely long time to get there because it is collecting telemetry on every track you play, every type of race class that you drive on those tracks, you know, where you turn. It's so much telemetry that, I've done, I don't know, a couple dozen races or something, and I looked at my thing, it's 5% synced.
Oh, it'll tell you.
Yeah, into the data, it says, straight up, this is how much sync you have with... So, basically, most of that bullshit, I think, is just the AI not having enough data to really figure this stuff out yet.
I would love to see, a 100% Drivatar start a new track with you, racing against it, and see if it behaves exactly the same, sight unseen, on this new track of this is creepy. He's crashing into the same spots I keep crashing into.
Yeah. Well, when I put about 70 more hours into this game, I'm sure I'll get close to that 100% number.
Anything new in Forza 6?
The main thing is, I don't know if there's more or less cars than there are normally. It doesn't seem like there's as many, but I could be wrong about that. The rain effects are in night driving are the two big things.
Aesthetics aside.
The rain stuff is much more than aesthetics.
Yeah.
It really changes... It really does change the way
play. And I've heard that the feedback stuff, you're playing, it's an Xbox One game, obviously, so I hear that the feedback stuff and the triggers is really good.
Good. And when you're going over the puddles, you feel it, in the back corner, if you just happen to catch it with your back tire, it's well done.
So this is not something that's been in other Forza games where the...
apparently not.
Weather doesn't affect the track conditions?
I mean, they're framing it that way. I'm trying to remember if they did before, but I can't recall. And if they did, it probably didn't affect it to this degree.
So what do you say to this rain? Rain and what?
There's rain and night driving.
And night driving. No snow?
No snow. Okay.
They would probably cancel the race.
You think? Okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
This is like a rally.
The rally stuff.
Yeah, is it a rally in Forza?
Well, I mean, rally. It has rally cars in it, but it's not rally racing. No, that's more like what Horizon sort of does, but the much more goofy version of that.
Do we still have a? So I've been out of Forza for a while.
I'm stopped. I'm not moving.
Is there still the like auction house and trading of cars?
So there isn't really. If there is, I haven't really messed with it in a long time. What they do now is that anytime you buy a new car, they just spit out a bunch of liveries that people have made.
Oh.
And it's just like you can choose from these popular ones, or you can go hunting for other stuff. Okay. So you're not actually buying people's designs. It's just like they're just there when you buy the car.
Interesting. Okay. And then I assume it's just cars up the wazoo.
Yeah, cars up the wazoo. They've really fixed a lot of the menu stuff from the last game that was bad. Like, I really didn't like Forza 5 at all, like even less so than Jeff did. For my part, I just thought it was a really badly designed game in a lot of ways. But
which is weird because like Jeff, I think, really liked Horizons. I think you really liked Horizons.
Yeah, Horizons, it was fun, but 5 was just like, it was lousy with microtransactions. It didn't move well.
It's
it had
super
a terrible
confusing
game flow to
when
it.
They
like,
never use anyone's last name.
You sit through all those fucking Top Gear intros for every Ooh. Type of car. Yeah, let me hear the fucking, this guy just endlessly drone on about hatchbacks and why they fucking matter. Like, no.
You
fuck
think
Top Gear.
Oh, man. Take them down a notch. They're on their knees. Are they doing a new Top Gear?
I think Amazon's doing something, right?
Oh, you're right. No, well, Amazon signed up, what's his face?
The guy.
Yeah.
The controversial guy.
Yeah.
There was a brief period where
I can't remember his name.
I enjoyed that show when it first came along, and I don't know, at some point that act just wore super thin on
So
me.
Just watch Top Gear US then.
No, watch X-Car, CNET on Cars.
I'd rather watch knives drilling brand. Into my eyeballs.
I've heard they're not. We
already did the Until Dawn.
I know, yeah.
Play dates.
Yeah, Until Dawn is a good game.
So, as somebody who is way into Forza, you're liking 6 so far.
I am, yeah. I'm enjoying it. I don't necessarily recommend that everyone go the stupid route that I did and just dump all of their livelihood into these car collection things, but I will say that I'm having a lot of fun.
Cool. Very cool. What do you think of Until Dawn?
I really like that game.
I really like that game.
I think it's real cool. I think, you know, it's definitely one of those kind of games. By that I mean it is a real quick timey.
I mean, you know, this drive was going too smoothly, so it only makes sense that I'm here stopped on the freeway now. I'm so close. I'm like, I don't know, 5 miles away, 10 at the most.
Like the way things are framed, it's not such that like you're seeing you're seeing different things, but it doesn't completely change the framework of what takes place later on.
I will say that we often fall into a trap when discussing interactivity in this way that discounts changes that quote unquote don't shift things the plot or something, right? Like,
well, we frame it in this way that it's like it's all an illusion, which I mean. Yeah, it is, but, like, so is all fiction inherently.
And it discounts the value that just, that the story changing has in and of itself, right? Like, I think about something like Kentucky Route Zero, where a character will ask a question, you'll answer it, and nothing changes 3 hours down the line because you've said a different thing.
Right.
But you've helped to define who your character is by saying that, and that has value in and of itself.
Yeah.
And it's easy for us because I think we've been trained. It's flashy when you play a BioWare game and you say something in the first hour and then in hour 12 that reflects a change. That's a flashy indication of interactivity.
Yeah.
But also, like, there's a scene in Kentucky Route Zero Act 3 that came out last year where you decide the lyrics to a song as it's sung. And that scene is fantastic, and it doesn't shift anything, but in and of itself, it just communicates something. I want to make sure we don't fall into that
trap. And you're still making the choice.
Right.
You know, it's still essentially up to you. But, I mean, even if it doesn't have, like, these wide-reaching butterfly effect style, you know.
But even in Until Dawn, when something happens to a character, and they pick up a machete, or something happens to them, and they carry that through the rest of the game, for us as the players and the viewers, Like, that's in our experience of it, even if it hasn't, even if it doesn't make the ending dramatically different. So, like, I don't want to discount those changes.
I feel like the discussion has only become kind of derisive around that stuff because the Telltale model of that has become so expected. They haven't really changed it since The Walking Dead. It's always been the same kind of framework. And people are always looking for, like, okay, how is this different than what the studio has been doing over and over again for the last couple of years?
I'm intent about this because I'm trying to correct myself. I've noticed that I've been thinking about Until Dawn in the way that I often take umbrage when people talk about Mass Effect or something else.
Right.
I realize that now I've been talking about Until Dawn in the way that I don't like hearing other people talk about it.
So I think the thing I really do like about the Telltale stuff and even the Kentucky Ridge Zero stuff, the anecdote you just told, is not necessarily the actual change that happens, but the possible perception of a change that might not even be there.
Right.
And that's what Telltale does, and that's probably, you know, what you expect from Until Dawn is like, will this affect something? I don't even know, but I feel like maybe it did. Like, even the lyrics to the song, like, if you told me that, like, we don't know what it does.
Right.
And it's like, wow, well, my playthrough, I wonder if this would have happened if I didn't.
See, I don't even need that. That's what I'm saying. It's like, it doesn't matter to me that it changed something. Like, if a character has a gun if a character has a gun in a game like The Walking Dead or Until Dawn, they find a gun, and that gun could be the solution to get them through a puzzle, or there could be another solution that gets them through a puzzle. And the end result is they still get through the locked door in the end. Mm-hmm. There are people who I think see that and say, like, oh, it wasn't a real choice then to get the gun or not, because either way they would have gotten through that locked door. For me, there's value in understanding, oh, this is a character who gets through it with a gun, or this is a character who gets through it some other way. The fact that it's not a false choice, it's just a choice that provides color instead of providing pure mechanical difference.
Well, it lets you play the way that you envision this character.
Exactly.
And I don't think it helped them that they framed a lot of that stuff, like, literally using the term butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Because, like,
yes,
yeah, the things you do in that game do affect outcomes and change things, but, like, it's not that far-reaching. You know, like, the core skeleton of that story is always going to be what it is. It's similar to The Walking Dead in that regard, in that, you know, the beginning and the end, there are different outcomes, but at the same time, the beginning and the end of the journey are essentially the same.
The classic diamond shape.
It's the relationships and the events in the middle that sort of are more the much more malleable.
And I'm not saying this is the only way to think about this stuff.
I'm just saying, in terms of Until Dawn, the diamond, the wide belt of the diamond, it's pretty severe when you're saying, like, the difference between one extreme of the endings is nobody survived, everybody's dead, and the other extreme is everybody's alive. Like, that's...
But for instance, there are characters in Until Dawn who can't die until the last scene.
Right, but, like, you know, that's still...
Totally.
That's a big difference in terms of, like, what you're getting at the end of that game.
Right, but I think, and I've seen people talk about this, like, in the comments, is that because the game presents you with this notion that every character can die, and every character can potentially be gone by the end of it, they're thinking that any event that they are taking part in could theoretically mean their demise, or could theoretically mean something, you know, really massive for them, when in reality, certain characters that's true for, others are essentially predestined to make it to a final scene.
And even the characters who can die in the middle can often get through a scene without it killing them, even if you fumble.
But that's metagaming, right? That's stripping away authorial intent of, like, hey, I don't want you to know that. Like, I want you to think.
And the first
time
you play, you don't know.
Yeah, and I want you to think that missing this X prompt might be the difference between, like, something happening or not happening. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's, you know, we can break it down and say, like, nah, you know, that you just fall off the cliff or whatever.
Right.
But, like, I love the, like, I don't know what this is going to do. And, like, that's great, because
I'm at the point where even if falling off the cliff doesn't get you killed, it does change the tone of the room.
Right,
where we're like, fuck, you fell off the cliff.
Right.
Damn it, Alex, how did you fall off the cliff? Ah!
And I even kind of like the red herrings it throws at you, where, like, there are situations where, you know, there's a quick time event pops up where you can follow one path or follow another. And in reality, you're still going to end up at the same point no matter what, but it's still keeping you thinking, like, this could mean something. This could be the end of it. So you have to, like, think quickly and meaningfully about everything you do in that game, even if it actually doesn't matter.
And, you know, I think it's one of the reasons some people liked turning the, like, a choice has been made thing off on some of those games. Because, like, sometimes you don't want to know that, like, oh, shit,
Emily will remember that and, like, call you a bitch for it later.
Right, or, like, just turn that notification off because I want this to feel even more seamless.
Yeah. It unsyncs you.
Yeah, so I think Until Dawn, some flaws aside, is a real
I think it's a success. I think it does what it sets out to do better than anyone really expected it to.
It's funny because the only time that I really took any deal of umbrage with the way the story panned out was the moments when we didn't have any choice and characters did stuff that felt like useless. Right. And why would they ever leave that? Why would they ever leave that room?
Yeah, essentially, it's the part where it's the horror movie part of it, yes, where they have to propel the characters forward, even in the face of all manner of reasons.
Right. Yes.
Which is fine.
Don't split up.
Yeah. What are you doing? No. You know better than this.
Don't leave the caged room to go after the one guy for no reason.
No reason. Love that game though. Really great game.
Good stuff.
And fun to play with other people. Jeff, you're still looking to play around
Halloween? Yeah, I'm still gonna hold it.
I'm gonna replay it around Halloween too, so maybe we can pair notes around that.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
All right, let's get into a little more news here, and maybe a little.
Is there more news?
Yes, some not necessarily announcement stuff, but some stuff happened here.
Oh yeah,
Austin, you've got a couple of stories on the site. Let's just start with the GameStop and the this kind of trend that is the most not shocking news story, but like saw this one coming.
From the no shit department.
From the no shit,
it's
Austin's.
No shit department. let's
have a little more respect here.
Plenty of shit in my department. Plenty of shit. It's the thing is that I do think it comes from the. There is a little bit of a surprise in that it's they're the only group in their kind of class of store doing this.
Yeah, but
let me explain what's happening. Yeah, there is a specific reason. You're right. So GameStop has announced, they didn't announce this. This came out of a conference call earning report from their quarter two earnings call. They are no longer going to hold or take stock of and then sell bundles, console bundles, that include only digital copies of games.
Gotcha.
So it used to be that you'd go in there, you'd say, I want to buy this bundle. I bought a PS4 earlier this year. I got a digital copy.
You get it from GameStop?
Yeah, yeah. Or from EB Games in Canada, which is GameStop. Which is still called EB Games.
Yeah,
it's strange. I know, I'm with you. Yeah. Anyway, so I got a digital copy of The Last of Us HD remake with that game, or with that console.
Did that influence your buying decision?
No, I was buying a PS4 so that I could review Battlefield Hardline. They sent me a PS4 copy instead of a PC copy.
How come you didn't get it through Amazon? You just needed that day?
I needed to get that review out because it was already late.
So you needed to get a physical, get there and buy it that day?
I had to buy a console that day, yeah. That came with The Last of Us HD. That's what most of the bundles have. And there's a bunch of different ones. If you want a Madden bundle, you can get a Madden bundle. If you want a Destiny bundle, you can get a Destiny bundle. If you want a whatever it is.
Sony does everything.
And
did it come in the box, or they gave you a code on the receipt or something?
Most of the...
Usually it's like a card.
Yeah, I think it's a card.
It's a card in the box.
In the box. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So I have to imagine for the manufacturers and stuff like that, it's a lot easier to just slip a card in there.
Now, sometimes GameStop or another retailer will also give you an out-of-box special card or a special... receipt thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, and also here's, I think I may have even gotten Destiny as a special promotion from GameStop at the time. That was a separate card.
There were a couple of games that were primarily digital releases that they did a boxed version of, mm-hmm. and the box was literally a download code in a fucking box.
Right. Yes, and stuff I know, like pre-order bonus stuff also comes same way, like on a receipt. The whole thing.
So, in this earnings call, GameStop executives, the CEO and the COO were talking. On the company to sell bundles of that include physical copies of games.
As of course they would.
Well, the thing, I think it kind of took them by surprise. Last year, there were so many of these different bundles. Many different big releases had a bundle associated with it, which meant that not only were you moving a digital product in your store, but you were selling game consoles to people, and then they weren't even leaving with a game, right? Like a physical game. And for GameStop, whose entire model is... They sell you a game, you play it, and then return it and do the trade-in. It's the used game sales and the used game resales that makes up the bulk of their business, of their profit. Of course they're going to do this.
That's a big bullet point, I think.
It's huge.
It's the only. Yeah. Right. Well, you could look at it. You could look at it and be like physical game sales, but this is a trade-in model.
That is what their model is. That's where they make their money. And I have mixed feelings about all of this, obviously. So the comment section on this piece is very active, which is great because I think there's people who are representing different perspectives that it's easy to forget about, especially if you're like us and live on the coast, right? We have really fast internet here that's mostly affordable. It's easy to think it isn't often, but like if you live in a flyover state where the internet isn't as good as it is on the coast, Totally makes sense to want a physical copy of a game.
Is that actually still true?
I'm getting the reports.
I mean,
it is,
I would,
like,
understand, like, in more rural areas where, like, you know, there isn't, like, a kind of central hub for that stuff. But I would imagine, like, you know, bigger cities.
If our comment section is to be believed, and I believe them, there are people who.
It's just shocking to me.
So yeah, it's a little surprising. It's not unheard of because when you look at the rest of the world, the U.S. is like 30th in average internet speed.
Yeah.
But, again, that's a real estate, like, square footage.
Yeah, we have a huge country.
It's very large. That's a lot of wire. Yeah. So look at it like that. And then, I guess, so, like, what's the threshold for, you know, good enough internet speed?
Good question.
Right? That's a
thing.
I think if you're
especially on the PlayStation.
If you're being practical, it's like, can I drive out to the store and get this, or is it going to take
in the same amount of time?
Right?
Is
it going to take me 18 hours to download Destiny? Yeah, convenience.
Right. Whatever, I almost got, like, 18 hours to download the last big thing on the PlayStation network. Like, that network ain't great, no matter where you are.
My parents have some property upstate New York, and all they have
DSL.
Dial-up, and it's like, that. I would never download. I have to bring a console with physical game.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I feel like satellite is always an option.
It is.
It's a complex thing because, you know, I grew up on used games. Like, I was a big creative guy.
I didn't grow up on used games.
I grew up on rentals.
I started at rentals, and then as, like, West Coast Video died and Blockbuster died and Hollywood Video died, and as I started to, like, convince myself, like, no, I want to play this game for more than a week.
Right.
I ended up, like, buying games and then trading back in, and it was just like, I'm in the ecosystem. I get power up reward points. Yeah. I get all that stuff.
So I think for me it was just an age thing. Like, I just like, the rental scene didn't completely die out until I was, like, a full time employee.
Yeah, I was still renting games well into the N64 era.
Okay.
Yeah,
I would still rent. We would still rent games then, but, like,
I had disposable income, and, like, I didn't buy games in college because everybody just shared stuff.
Right.
So, like, by the time I was out and the rental scene was dying, I had disposable income. I could buy stuff. Mm-hmm. And then not soon after that, I started working for, GameSpot.
And then
And then everybody was like, hey, we have this copy. Do you want to play this?
We have this elaborate game library.
Yeah.
Our data team,
God,
like,
remember that?
What's
your karma point at? Or your
fucking
karma
Dave
level?
Toyster being like, I don't know. You didn't return the last game that quickly.
You lose karma points, and then you couldn't check anything out of the library.
That
how it
went?
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was a really elaborate system, but it was kind of great.
It was
sounds pretty
great.
Cool.
Funny. We should get a library. We should get a game.
Yeah,
cool.
Good karma points.
We'll be lucky if we get a room to store in that shit at this point.
We've talked about this trade and stuff a lot. And you haven't been here, so, like, in the history.
So I don't know, what is your?
Well, I don't want to get too deep into it because I know there are just so many different situations that define, like, your income or the way you play games that I have heard from so many people that justify their situation. I'm not a huge fan of the trade-in stuff because
especially when there's secondary markets that will give you more value for what you have.
I mean, anything would give you more value generally than what GameStop
that,
would give you for your stuff.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like if you're in that system all the way and have the rewards card stuff and are trading in old stuff.
If you're
constantly,
all in, it's probably okay.
And if you're younger, like they do let you do stuff without having to have, like, credit cards and like accounts on other sites like eBay and that kind of stuff.
Right. I got through college playing video games by doing this thing where I worked all summer, saved up money, and then stretched that money long through trade-ins and stuff, which is silly. And, like,
if you're completely committed, you can kind of make that last longer than it rightfully.
But I don't want to walk back from also saying that I don't like the system, and I do think that there are other ways that are better for individuals.
Well,
anyway.
And the long-term reality of this is that it's not going to matter in X number of years anyway,
of
because they're doing this specifically because the writing's on the wall.
So even that is a strange thing, right? Because, you know, one of our readers wrote in and gave a bunch of information about the SEC filings that GameStop has done over the last few years. They're still a very profitable company. They're still doing well. But I do see this as a reaction to the reality of the market. They are addressing a thing that other retailers aren't for various reasons.
Yeah.
You know, their model is not Amazon's model. And Amazon does do some used games, but they're not gonna die if used games dry up.
And this is not this is not conjecture. This is explicit in, they're literally saying
I already think they've made indications that, like, they've explored secondary protocols where, like, yes, Alex, the writing has been on the wall for half a decade.
I mean, the writing would be more on the wall if perhaps Microsoft had stuck to its guns on a few things. I'm not saying they should have.
And we wrote a lot about that when that announcement came out. I remember writing something where it was like, yeah, this is probably the way it should be. More for, like, you know, you want that that sort of like marketplace that evolves, like where Steam's at, where like games mm-hmm. get really cheap at times, and like there's this ever, you know, evolving sort of pricing structure. I was defending that when Microsoft said, you know, I was like, I get it, you know, like
let's go.
Having value on your physical copy is a thing, but in the end,
and it is a thing.
It is.
I don't want to discard
for all those
say,
people. And I guess these people also buy CDs, and I guess they
probably. So this is the thing. It's so complicated, yeah. And it's really hard to have this conversation without finding someone who is the exception to what you think is the rule, or that right. is like that makes the most sense. Obviously, and they're like, well, except for this one person over here who, for whatever reason, it worked out yeah. the other way. I know for me, it's I have this weird, strange thing where. Because I had physical games my whole life, I never really built a collection of games, because what would happen is I'd play a game until I beat it, I would trade it in to get something new, and then what I'd end up with as the generation shifted was like the handful of games I never beat that I never really liked. I'd still have those
yeah.
around.
Just rotting away.
But then
you wouldn't just put those in a bag and go try and get money off the console?
No, because at that point, it was worth nothing. Yeah. I was like, well, I may as well just hold on. So now I have like a bunch of PS1 games I don't care about anymore, right?
You have your
Larry games, Tom will take them at this point.
Yeah, probably. Whereas now, I like, oh, I'm buying digital stuff. I'm slowly building this collection. Like,
right.
The other day, I was playing Metal Gear, or before I had Metal Gear Solid 5, and people were like comparing it to Far Cry 2, and I was like, man, I should play Far Cry 2. And I had it on Steam. I bought Far Cry 2 physically 3 or 4 times, played it and traded it in when it first came out. That's still where I was at in my life. So now I have this other thing happening with digital, and again, right. who knows? Digital could all go away tomorrow. Like, I understand the clarity.
Cloud could burst.
The cloud could burn down. I get it. But, like, right now, it's letting me
clouds work.
Clouds, listen.
They don't really have a structure.
They're putting things in our
down.
Clouds.
It's a gaseous form.
Chemtrails are...
They're trying to get rid of the cloud.
They're trying to get rid of the
cloud.
That's
what they're trying to do.
Yes.
Yeah, like...
So it's complicated.
Cloud trails.
There are... Yeah, it is a complicated issue, and I have learned not to really come out and take a stance on this.
Learned that even when I didn't take a stance, apparently I've taken a stance.
Yeah.
So.
Well, right. So that also happens. The thing I will say, though, about GameStop in particular is the house wins, right?
Mm-hmm.
The house is making money on this. So the part that I always used to feel was a little dirty is the exploitative nature of it. It is trying to get people who are best served in a position to take a loss on the value of the game so they can mark it up and sell it for more money
to another person in the same scenario.
So, like, but that works out and benefits some people who are
sure.
like, I'm a kid, I need to offload a duffel bag full
right.
of games for one reason or another.
Because I really want Destiny the Taken King.
And I don't care. These games have zero value
right.
to me anymore. So
like,
I'll take $2 on the game.
Yep.
And that's valuing
and
that
kid.
It's
nice to have a franchise that'll do that for you right.
And I don't have I'm not in a position where I can sell these on eBay. I don't
right.
have the credit
or,
card set up. I don't have the PayPal account.
The game stops around the corner from me.
Right.
Or I don't
There's
have a car.
Set.
I don't whatever.
And this is where it gets tricky because, like, that is part of the convenience argument for GameStop. And I've run into people who say that, like, oh, the reason GameStop is good is because I can hold on to my games, my physical games. I don't care about the convenience of digital, like, digital downloads of you know, software that you just download. I don't care that I can just, like, that's convenient for you. What's convenient for me is running around the corner to GameStop. And then at that point, we're just talking about what's convenient for whoever. And,
right.
and
it ends up falling into this weird relativistic thing.
And, I mean, you get even more relative when you start talking about here, where, like, there are actual independent game stores,
yeah.
you know, that don't exist in most of the country, you know?
Sure.
Which, by the way, shout out to my local game store, which did not have either MGS or Mario Maker when I went in to get it. Had to go next door to the GameStop to get. I felt so bad, I didn't want to do it, but literally the guy at the counter was like, we don't have it, you should go to GameStop.
So bad
they just did not have enough copies.
You should have pre-ordered.
So
don't forget, GameSpot bought...
He did it. We've all been trying
to
do it.
I've 12 times.
That
was the first mistake I've made with that thing in probably 10 months.
Wow.
Really?
I had a flawless track
That's
record.
That's
what
everybody talked about.
That's
my
not
game
flawless.
Assholes.
I know.
Screwed me.
Every time I've said it, I've like had to do it in my head.
I will start the counter back at 0.
All right. Times until days run without somebody saying GameStop.
GameStop bought ThinkGeek, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah. So that's.
And they did some mobile phone stuff. Like they are stuff. They are trying to do that.
They're buying old games now too.
They'll take your iPad.
I do feel like they'll be the Radio Shack of like so, in like 10 years.
Is it Radio Shack?
No. Yeah, no. That's what I mean. Like, okay. Like it'll be like, oh, Home Electronics. This is huge. Everybody
but they're still like
this.
Flagship Port Authority Radio Shacks that you need to know about.
Wait,
are
no,
no,
no. The Radio Shack in Port Authority is gone.
Is gone. Okay, I just got a press release today that said Radio Shack is selling the BB-8.
What?
Yeah. So
I thought, they got rescued at the very last second by some.
They did.
But I don't think they were going to keep the stores open. I think they were just going to keep it as like a digital store brand or something.
General Wireless bought them through a bankruptcy court.
And they bought all their data.
And they owned, they owned 1,700 locations.
There's outstanding litigation.
They bought their email address.
Right, whether or not like all of the data they acquired is okay.
I don't think that is
and
okay.
And I think, and like. So I could have sworn it's being challenged in Texas, and Texas apparently, go figure, has like the most so like a very rigid
privacy law,
consumer privacy law that's set up. I don't know, whatever. We talked about it on 404 a long time ago. But going back to GameStop,
yes,
two for two.
Yeah. Just call it eBay. Call it an electronic boutique.
Yeah. Just call it Babbage's.
Yes.
Remember Babbage's?
Right, right. I remember Babbage's.
I remember there was an electronic boutique and a Babbage's like next to each other.
And they were like, we don't know each other.
And a GameStop.
Funko Land.
And a Funko Land.
Funko Land.
Yeah, down the block. Like razor wire.
And then a KB Toys to round it.
Yeah, I knew.
I remember someone came to me before I started seeing it. I was just a video game enthusiast at the time.
It's a young buck.
And it was not an EB game, not a GameStop, none of those. But it was like some franchise. This guy's like, I want to start a franchise, a video game. I want to open up a video game franchise. I think it was like Play and Trade or something like that.
That sounds like a thing.
That's the only thing that would have existed.
It was in South Jersey.
Yeah, that's totally. I just remembered the shopping center.
It was
the one in
Play and Trade.
That's totally right.
It was at Forked River.
Mine was in Summers Point, but
anyway,
yes, it's definitely Play and Trade.
Play and Trade. So he's like, but it was like a friend of my uncle, or a cousin. He's like, I want to open it. What do you think? And I'm like, I don't think you should do that.
You and little Jeff.
Yeah, I was like 25. I was like, I don't think you should do that. This is all digital.
How are they doing?
It's all going digital. He didn't do it. And I saw him. I remember.
He opened the coconuts.
He's like, I shouldn't have done that. It was a good job. I was like,
I don't know. I think this is a logical move.
I opened a Tower Records.
It's a logical move, but it's, I don't know.
There's bad optics on it, right? Like it looks, like I say in the piece, I think it's a logical move. I also think it feels desperate.
It does.
When Amazon doesn't do this, Target doesn't
right.
do this,
so
Best Buy doesn't do this, etc.
So this is like the first, sort of dent
in the armor,
right? So like, what'll be the one where it's like, oh, now you're bleeding?
When their used game sales go down by like 60% in a year.
You're saying what's the move?
Yeah, like what's the move? Like because there's no way they were like, oh, this is gonna come out and go over real well.
Well, this sucks. I think this sucks too because you will not get the pre-order stuff unless you buy the physical copy.
Oh, I should clarify. I just realized we did not give enough facts about the store. We got sidetracked with like the kind of philosophical discussion around it.
It happens.
So what's happening is they started with Madden. The Madden bundle had a physical packet. They negotiated deals with EA, Microsoft, and Sony. So there would be a physical bundle. They're going to keep trying to negotiate those physical bundles directly with Microsoft and Sony. And they said, well, if Microsoft and Sony keep doing this thing with the official digital packet stuff, we're going to try to go to third parties and build bundles outside of that.
So effectively, they'll get the systems, they'll deal with the publishers to get extra copies of the games and find ways to sell their own bundles.
That is what they will try to do. Who knows what that looks like?
Yeah.
I know it won't look as nice as the bundle on the shelf elsewhere that says Destiny PlayStation 4 official bundle.
How is it going to be this like ugly? Like,
I don't know.
It's
maybe they'll have
a fucking copy of
box
duct tape to a box.
Maybe they have a plan. Maybe they have a graphic designer on board. Maybe
I
mean? Like,
or
I don't know.
Maybe they rip the code out of the box and put a hard copy in there, right?
Maybe.
Yep. All right.
It'll be like those used covers that like the clerks draw when they're
I love those covers. Those covers are the best.
There it is, Saints Row 2.
So they used to sell, didn't they? Used to sell codes for games in GameStops.
I think they still do.
We did, right? And they said they. So they used to sell. But I'm saying, like instead of buying Destiny, you could just buy a code, right?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I know, like, they would only do codes, for, as far as I'm aware, for, like, cash in the
DLC
store.
DLC and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so you couldn't actually just buy... Because I thought there was, like, you can buy Xbox Live Arcade games in a GameStop.
Oh, maybe.
That was like, hey...
I vaguely remember that being a news story.
Or maybe, like, on their website.
That would
you
be,
could definitely actually, do yeah. digital yeah. stuff on their website. Right. For sure.
Yeah, I like, part of me feels like, hey, can you blame them?
No.
This is their... This, it's like...
And this could pay off. Like, yeah. I'm not the business dude, like, who knows how this is, like, yeah, this could work.
Yeah, you can't blame them. Your politics and feelings on, like,
right.
them aside as a business trying to just get by.
Yeah.
I will say that there is a it's important, like you said, to remember that this is just a business decision. I think sure. There are a lot of people who value their physical copies of games for, again, philosophical and political reasons. Like, we want to own stuff. We don't want to move over to the cloud because we don't own that stuff.
We don't trust it necessarily.
Right, exactly. And I'm not throwing shots at that. I get that skepticism.
And for them, this is the place that's going to have their physical
right.
copies.
Totally.
So if they go out of business, then...
But at the same time, it's... They're not doing this to uphold the glory of physical media.
No.
That's not...
They're doing this to uphold their glory of physical
right.
media.
And because the way that they operate physical media is about this trade-in stuff. Like, Amazon sells you physical games, but they're not worried about this because they're not... Their business isn't about buying those physical games back for you at a lower rate.
Yeah,
you
know? They want that game back. Right. They want it back in their store, and they right. want to sell it used. And they hate that there's a one-use code to get on. Remember that stuff?
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Remember those codes?
Yeah. Did those go away? They had a name. What
was
it called?
Yeah.
Online passes.
There's online passes. I feel like they're not there anymore.
No, you have season passes now.
But remember, yeah, they have season passes. But remember, like, every game would come with, like, okay, and here's the code for the online stuff, because if you motherfuckers sell this back used, you have to pay $15 to buy another.
Yes.
Pretty sure that was an EA innovation.
I think Warner had it, too.
A bunch of different publishers had it.
Yeah.
But I think EA was the innovator of new ways to charge you money for things.
And this is why, like I say, this is all so complicated. It's so hard to take a position that doesn't step on some toes that maybe you don't want to step on. Because... That the season pass stuff, if you were a big trade or not season pass, the online pass stuff, if you were a big used game buyer, that sucked for you. But also, like, if you're EA, you're looking at games people going to GameStop to buy used games, and you're not getting any of that cash.
So you get the initial sale.
Yeah, and that's it. And then that one sale repeats 3 or 4 times.
I'm not even sure that stuff gets reported in terms of, like,
MPDs even, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, who knows?
All that's left for us to do is just stand back and watch these supposed business partners all try to devour one another and
see
who's left standing.
Yeah. Taco Bell. There it is.
I will say, if anybody's out there is commenting that I'm out of touch with this, I am.
Sure.
I buy everything digitally. I buy it on the PC.
It's all digital
now. It's a mix for me. I will buy physical copies if I don't feel like, you know, stuffing a game onto my hard drive. Because, man, every time I delete a game off my Xbox One, it's like a little twinge. It's like, am I ever going to download this
again? Can you even do that?
Yeah.
You can say delete me? I thought you couldn't even... I thought they locked that up.
No, you can.
Okay.
What do you mean?
I thought Xbox One was like, listen, we'll take care of it.
Well, it's weird. The logic in the system is like, okay, we're not going to... remove the zeros and ones, but we're gonna make you think it's not here anymore.
Oh, okay.
And like, if you want to install it, I feel like it's still there.
I don't know
if doesn't need this space,
but you can still install new games over that space.
I made it home against all odds. Suck-ass situation that was tonight. All right. Everybody have a good night.
Ugh.